once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with, believe me, another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And since we're not doing this from where we normally do it, with a completely different set of technology, it may sound a little strange, and it may even be strange, but who knows. But at any rate, we're here, and you're there. And because this is not a live show, obviously it's a dead show.
Yes. We are dead in dead color.
Well, we are. Hopefully we're not dead at this point. We're actually recording this on June 17th. And I recognize it's probably not the 17th where you are. However, there's a time warp between where we are and where you are.
Yes. For you, it's the 21st.
Yes. It is. Well, if it's the 21st, don't call in.
Right.
Actually, if it's any other day, don't call
in. The 17th, don't call in either, because if you could know that it was the 17th of June, 2014, and you were trying to call in, then you do need to call in so that we will somehow. Yep. You have a link to the past that most people don't have.
Right, and actually, since time does not flow backwards in this dimension, it's very unlikely you'd be able to call. So we're not going to give out the telephone numbers, because if you called them, all you're going to do is irritate the poor guy who's trying to run our show on the air and, you know, not be able to talk to
us. Yeah, you don't want to irritate those guys.
But this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and we are, besides doing a radio program once a week intermittently or however we do it, also an SEC registered investment advisor, and we tell you that because it's disclosure and we're supposed to let you know these things. And we are people who talk about things which relate to investment and things of that ilk, which you'd never guess from the name of our radio program, The Personal Wealth Coach, but that's who we are. So I guess we probably ought to get started talking about something that has something to do with investing. And I guess the first thing I wanted to talk about, I guess, is the fact that I don't know if you've got it, but I've gotten a lot of, noise. That's probably not the right word. Several of our clients have contacted me. This is Jeff. Wanting to know what the cause is of the coming downturn in the market and the economy.
They know about this before it's
happened. Right. Apparently, on some form of the not news media, there's a lot of discussion about an upcoming collapse in market values or something of that nature.
You're right.
And as far as and it's really, really hard to tell you the reason for something that's not going to happen.
Or that is going to happen, just maybe not in the way that it's being described, or nobody knows how it's going to happen.
Right.
That's probably
right.
Well,
the whole issue is the nice thing about about predicting a market decline is if you predict one long enough, you'll be right.
Yeah.
Because eventually there'll be some form of market decline. We've talked about the fact that sometime this year there'll be a correction in all likelihood. So far, we've gone about as long as the stock market ever goes without a correction. However, there's a little piece of good news in all of this. There is so much pessimism out there, and I hear a lot of it.
There's so many people saying that it's due for a correction.
Right.
We're not the only ones. Everybody's saying it.
And there's a lot of people who seem to think not only is it due for a correction, but we're due for a major market collapse in the immediate future. That it makes it extremely unlikely we will even get a correction at this point.
Right. This is after us just a moment ago saying that it's likely that we'll get a correction sometime this year. We both talk about this, and one of our indicators is how many people are talking about whether or not there's going to be a correction. If a lot of people are talking about how it's going to be wonderful, then we say, put your seatbelts on, things are going to have bumps. We're looking at it and logically speaking, looking around saying it's been going a long time without a correction. Normally that would mean get ready for a correction, but everybody's saying get ready for a correction, which means there's probably not going to be one.
We're in a bit of an unusual time as far as my lifetime is concerned and history in general is concerned. And I've been at this over three decades. And during that time period, what we've seen is a certain pattern to the markets. However, what we've not seen before in my experience, and I have to look in history to find it, is the situation that we have today. Back in 2008 and 2009, we had a financial meltdown. We had a major bear market and, of course, a major recession that was created by the financial centers imploding, and the government had to step in to prevent a major depression from taking place. Now, I know there's a lot of people who don't even like to think about the fact that the government stepped in and did it for political reasons, but the fact is, everybody who studied this even halfway seriously concludes that the free market system was collapsing very, very quickly back in 2008 and 2009. And it was, interestingly, a combination of two administrations, one conservative Republican, the other one relatively liberal, I suppose, Democrat, that together did almost exactly the same thing. Their policies were almost identical, and they prevented a major market crash and financial center meltdown from becoming the Great Depression number two, I suppose, except for the fact there's been more before that. Right. So
we would have to rename them from the Great Depression to a Great Depression, and that just gets hard. It's easier to just say the Great Recession.
Actually, what's going to happen is we're bound to have another one. As long as we think this is a one-shot deal.
Right. Right.
We'll do it again.
And when we look at history, the 1837, they called the Great Depression. But
and
now,
in 1873.
The Great Depression.
And then 1929, we had the Great Depression.
The Great Depression.
And by the way, we're due for another one in about 15 years. But until then.
We should be on pretty smooth rails at this point.
Well, sort of. And this is the point. Once we've had a financial center meltdown of this nature, of this severity, and we had, it really was a pretty bad thing that happened.
What, this thing we just lived through?
Yes.
You think that, what?
It was potentially...
Yes, it was pretty bad.
It was potentially nasty, we got saved from it, which, by the way, guarantees the next one will be nasty. But the point is that we made it through this one, but people are so shell-shocked, if for lack of a better term, by that event that they're going to predict it into the future for an extended period of time.
Right.
And generally speaking, we've got to have a complete change before it could happen again. But that's beside the point.
Yeah, what you're getting to here is important stuff.
And this is the issue. Whatever we're most afraid of in the financial markets is the thing that's least likely to happen. We're terrified of inflation. In fact, the inflation rate predicted by Treasury, inflation predicted protected securities, which is the consensus of the Treasury market, is now lined up at about 2% a year. We're looking at the Treasury open market, not the Fed. We're talking about people who buy and sell Treasuries, are in effect creating a consensus. They've created a consensus that inflation over the next 5 to 7 years will be about 2% a year. And yet, when surveys are taken here in the United States, an interesting fact falls out of the surveys, and that is most Americans are convinced we're going to have runaway inflation. And oddly enough, most Europeans are convinced we're going to have runaway deflation.
Right.
And frankly, our economies are sufficiently linked that it's impossible for both of us to be correct on this issue.
Right. Somebody's got to be right. Somebody's got to be wrong. Or more likely, neither of us are right, and it's somewhere in the middle.
But the issue is we don't have any of the elements working in the economy at the moment that generate inflation. It's kind of like saying if it's pouring down rain and you have some wood in front of you and you're afraid it's going to spontaneously catch on fire.
Right.
It's very unlikely if the wood is wet.
Yeah.
That's not to say it's impossible. Somebody could come along and pour gasoline on there and actually start a fire. But so far, there's no gasoline in the area.
There's a very
and the
popular,
wood is very wet.
There's a very popular song out right now called I Set Fire to the Rain.
Really?
So it is possible under certain song conditions for wood to alight this.
You could do that, but you'd have to have a lot of sodium.
Right. I think you're going somewhere with this. I kept expecting it to happen, but I'm going to jump in and say it because I've been excited about you saying it and then you've been moving around.
Okay, let's see what it is that I didn't say.
All right. And in most bull markets and in most bear markets, you have a very normal, almost predictable method of acting, where in a normal bull market, where we see these things. I've seen them in my career. You've seen them in your career. You have a certain given period of time that we have up, and then we have a correction, and then we have a certain period of that, and then we have some more up, and then we have a correction, until eventually it becomes a bear market. These are called cyclical bulls, and for that matter, when you flip them around and do it from the other direction, they're called cyclical bears. But we're in the middle of something. We've been talking about this for over a decade. We've been talking about the fact that we're in a secular position. And right now, a secular position means that we are unlikely to have the correction that we were just talking about. And we're going to be able to talk about that more after the break, but we have some commercials coming up, actually.
Yeah, and so the bottom line to it is, whoever it is that's claiming to say we're going to have a major recession or a major downturn in the market or something coming up are probably the same people who said that we're going to have runaway inflation at this point. We'll talk about this a little more on the other side. However, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
You can't call in this hour, but you can call voicemail, and we'll talk about it next week at 947-1111 or 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can leave us a message.
And we'll be back after these important words from KTM sponsors.
We are back,
I think. At least we're sort of back. And this is the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. We are not live today. This is a recording. And as a result, you can call in all you want to, but you won't be able to talk to us or on the radio. So you just have to listen to us, which is generally what happens on every day that we're live. And so, of course, many people will want to call in today because we aren't live.
Right.
We're unlive. So something like that. Okay. This is a case where we're actually in two places at the same time. We're actually talking on the radio, but we're also somewhere else. Which
right. We're doing a recording from our new temporary studio in the office, which means that we have computer wires and screens and things tangled all over the place.
And it's massively experimental, and we'll probably screw it up.
Of course. That's the way things happen.
This is what we were talking about, is the unlikelihood of a major market downturn at this point. There's a couple of reasons for it. One, the stock market is probably approaching fair valuation right now, just a little bit below historic normal valuations. Generally speaking, for a major market downturn to occur, you have to have an overpriced market. Well, we don't have an overpriced market. We also have got a lot of momentum that we've got to build up that we lost. So there's an awful lot of room for expansion at this point. Inflation is low. Interest rates are low. There's a surplus of money sitting around on the sidelines. We have all the ingredients, by the way, for continuing to fire up a bull market.
Right. When we talk about cash, part of the thing that brought us into the Great Recession was corporations and people having a lot of debt and not a lot of cash, so that when the debt was no longer easily available, corporations had to lay people off because they didn't have the reserves sitting there to pay them through. They had plenty of profit. The profit disappeared as they laid the people off, because then laid off people can't buy as much.
Yeah. Now, I haven't
We don't have any of those things in the scenario right now.
Now, I actually haven't heard this myself, but I've had several people report to me that the reason they thought, or at least the reason the commentators on the radio or television or whatever were saying we're going to have a major market downturn and a recession and all kinds of bad things happen, is that the Federal Reserve is tapering off their purchasing of bonds on the open market, or as they said, printing money. Here's the interesting thing. Admittedly, if somebody is doing billions of dollars of purchases a year in the economy, it does have an effect.
Yeah.
And we're talking about tens of billions of dollars per month. But this is the point. General Motors output is bigger than that.
Right. And this is something that we just were at a conference last week and something that I brought up with several people. We have commitments from Japan and China and a great deal of other Asian countries to step up purchasing of U.S. treasuries on the open market, not at the treasury auctions. And the commitments, the things that they've just said, this is what we need to do for our budgetary requirements. That's what I mean by commitment. Are more than what the tapering is. So when the Fed is not buying, it's being picked up by these Asian countries at a greater rate. Now, that may not be a great thing, but what it means is that even as the Fed tapers the so-called printing money, what really is going on here is people wish to buy those securities, whether it's the Fed or a government of another country or a United States citizen. What that amounts to is money coming into the hands of people that own those bonds. And this is why it's called printing money, because when that money comes into people's hands, they look around and they say, where can I put this money? I could buy some more U.S. treasuries. Well, they look at the U.S. treasury and they say, wait, this thing is only paying me for 10 years. It's paying me 3%.
Not even that much, 2.5%.
Yeah, 2.5%. I'm not going to put my money away for. So they either invest it in a small business or they invested in the market, and this is part of the reason why the market has been doing so well. It isn't all the Federal Reserve's actions. It's people sitting on those bonds going, I'm getting 2.5% on this, while the market has been doing very well.
And we say the market's doing well. Let me put that in a little bit of perspective, because it often isn't in perspective. The Standard & Poor's 500 stock index is up a little over 5% so far this year. And we're approaching the half-year point, obviously. So, you know, it looks like we're going to have maybe a 10. If it were to continue through the rest of the year, a 10 or 11% return on the market. Well, guess what the really, really long-term average is for the stock market? Well, it's 10 or 11%. So what we're having is the market isn't running away. It's not doing anything unusual. It has a pretty good 12-month return. The S&P 500 right now for 52 weeks is up about 18%.
Wait a minute. You said 12-month, and then you said 52 weeks.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Let me back
okay.
up.
Okay.
Well, so let's, year to date.
Let's use a completely different number and say year 12. Well, we got 1 year,
date,
12 months, or 52 days. Let's do 365 days.
Okay. But let me. Okay. What happens is this year, the S&P 500 is up about a little over 5%.
Year to date. Yeah.
Year to date. Now, mm-hmm. if we project that out to the end of the year, at the rate of growth we've seen in the market so far this year,
it's roughly 10.
It's roughly 10, 11%. Yeah. Now, if we look back 52 weeks, which is a year ago, for those of you who don't keep up with such things.
I try not to. My memory doesn't go back that far.
Then the S&P 500 is up about 18%, which is more than average, but then again, the previous year we didn't do all that well. So, okay, we're back. We're basically we're not in a runaway market. We're not in a high-speed market. But the important thing to realize is that the people who are predicting, the same people, and I did a little bit of research on this, the same people who appear to be predicting that when the Federal Reserve stops buying bonds, the market's going to crash and the economy is going to crater, are the same voices on the same channels, on the same networks.
They have the same faces as well.
I haven't seen their faces, so I'll take your word for it. They have the same names.
I'm just assuming that the voice hasn't switched faces.
These are the people who 5 years ago were saying at this point we were going to have runaway inflation because the Federal Reserve was buying so many bonds. In other words, they predicted disaster from the Federal Reserve buying bonds, and now the Federal Reserve is going to slack off from buying bonds. They're predicting disaster again.
Yes. And so Federal Reserve, don't buy, but when you stop buying, if you buy, there's a disaster, but if you stop buying, there's a disaster.
And
there's some people that just look for disasters everywhere.
Right. And very frankly, if you're listening to a channel where the current administration in the White House is out of favor, you're going to hear gloom and doom and disaster a lot. And you're going to hear that for a very simple reason. It's hopeful predicting, because if the economy were to be in really, really, really bad shape this fall, the Republicans would totally sweep the elections.
Right. And this is a thing that I think is being overlooked. This is something that I find to be fascinating. the big things people are looking for a correction in the market to be predicted by these things. You know, the people have asked about the canary in the coal mine. They're talking about employment figures. When they get healthier, watch out, because that means there's going to be a change in the amount of money in the environment. And they also say, well, the Federal Reserve is going to be tapering. And not only that, you might get a double whammy because the employment figures might get better at the same time because Janet Yellen has said she's going to taper. What they're missing is something pretty important here, and I think this is vastly important. The reason why Janet Yellen would be tapering at that point is because the economy is healthy. Mm-hmm. It means that the economy is doing well. Now, that might cause a correction in the market.
Well, you know, there has been a 10% correction in the last 52 weeks in one part of the market.
Which one?
Gold.
Oh, well, that's true.
It's down 10%.
Yeah. What I'm saying is that this particular correction that people are talking about, that they're afraid of, is a correction that will only take place if people recognize that the economy is healthy. I have a lot of trouble finding a bad thing here. This is the sort of thing that causes me to smile. I kind of like corrections when people recognize that the market is healthy or that the economy is healthy, because I see that as a absolutely great buying opportunity. When if you're looking around and the reason why the market is down is because the Fed tapered, but the reason why the Fed tapered is because the economy is healthy, well long term, I think that that's going to be better, not worse.
Well, actually, the market shows no evidence of falling because the Fed might taper. They were actually the only market fall that we saw associated with that was when the Fed was not tapering, but somebody thought they were.
Right, right. So if the Fed maybe tapers but doesn't, that might cause a market to drop. But if the Fed actually tapers and does, then no, it's just fine. We're talking about the rationality of the people that invest in the market, and I think individually they may have a good idea what they're doing. Most likely,
well, the
probably
other thing,
not.
The other thing that probably is making some people very unhappy and cause them to want to see a downturn in the economy is the budget deficit shrunk by 30% compared with where it was this time last year.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah, I'm looking at the headlines about record deficit for whatever, and I'm looking at it going, wait a minute, no, that's not a record since when? And then it says in the small print, record since a year ago, or record since
last week
or something. Exactly. It's well, really short-term records. That's not a record, guys.
Here's an interesting little factoid. It's in the June 14th Barron's, if you want to take a look at it. But Gene Epstein reported this. Who's
we like
their
him.
Economist. We like him. He's a Republican, by the way. There's a couple of interesting things going on right now. Compared with last year, the tax receipts to the federal government are up 7%. I know that's bad news, but
wait a minute. Bad news? That's a record that's real. We're having absolute record revenue.
Mostly because a lot more people are working than used to work.
Right.
Okay. And then there's another little problem that is going to make some people very unhappy. Actually, outlays by the federal government are down 2% over last year.
Right. We're spending less money at the governmental level.
So actually, the governmental expenditure shrinkage is in terms of percentages is the greatest that we have seen since the end of World War II. Now you're not going to like this, folks. I realize that. But under President Obama, the government has shrunk and expenditures have shrunk to the greatest degree since the end of World War II. So that's why the deficit is falling so relatively fast at this point. Is tax revenues are up, not because of higher taxes, but because of people working more. And at the same time, the expenditures are down. And
right.
We got a break for commercials again. You are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we'll do our best to be back on the other side of these important words from KTEM sponsors.
If you would like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail waiting, 947-1111. Or 1-800-914-7526. That's for next week's. If you want to call in with a question, our voicemail's waiting. That's 947-1111 or 800-914-7526.
looks like we're back again with more of the Personal Wealth Coach despite our best efforts. And this is the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we're doing sort of an unusual show today. We are recording this in advance. So if you call in, you have a talk to, you can talk to whoever's operating the board, or else they're going to ignore you, as the case may be. But at any rate,
hey, who knows? We may have ignored you too if you called.
Yeah, that's true. That's always possible. Anyway, we're talking about the budget, the United States money coming in, going out, cash flows. Very. We talked about the fact that there was a 7% increase in taxes and so on that came into the federal government. There's another little issue that came in. Apparently, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, those miscreants of mortgage madness, have started returning a lot of money to the federal, to the Treasury. So
yeah,
the money that the that was spent under TARP, for example,
right,
and other expenditures that kept us from falling off the cliff. The fiscal cliff,
yes.
Was it? No, it wasn't really the fiscal. The fiscal cliff was later.
Right.
It was the financial cliff that we were trying to not fall off of. At any rate, a lot of that money that was spent by the federal government is now returning multiplied.
Yeah, as far as TARP is concerned, the overall profit has been very large. There's been a large return on that money. The only area where the government seems to have lost money and is locked in the loss, it was the bailing out of General Motors. The bailing out of the auto industry area was a loss all the way around. They didn't lose as much as they put into it, but they lost a lot.
There's another little item going on in the economy that sort of argues against the economic downturn that some people seem to be so eager to see, and that is that it appears this year so far we're seeing consumer spending up 4%. Okay, 4%, no big thing. Yes, it is a big thing. Consumer spending is the biggest part of our economy.
It's what drives the rest of it.
As a result, if the consumers are spending 4% more this year than they were last year, we can reasonably expect to see everything else sort of spin up down the road. We can see we're going to see hiring. Hiring apparently is on the rise, according to executives who've been surveyed, and they're asked the question, are you planning to hire more people in the future than it did in the past? And if they say yes, obviously that's a positive. The manufacturing index is up to about 56. Anything above 50 is positive.
By positive,
growth,
we mean that's new growth. That's
right.
Stuff that's above what our normal growth is. Above what our normal, just I'm putting stuff out to make the same that I made last month.
So we're seeing a lot of evidence that the economy is slowly growing. I say 4%, that really isn't all that slow, but it's growing at a very reasonable rate. And right now, and admittedly we're only halfway through the year and a lot of unusual things can happen. I think we've seen a lot of unusual things happen in the recent past. But it looks like we're on track to have about a 3% growth in GDP this year. Now, that's not exceptional. It isn't a runaway. It isn't something that's going to cause a lot of inflation.
Now, the IMF downgraded it.
They did.
They said that they expect us to make, I think they said 2.3%. But
well,
the IMF just came out a week ago and said they're often wrong with their estimates.
Well,
which is nice of them to actually admit the fact that often is, I've never seen them get it right. So
well, the Bureau of Economic Analysis, that, which is where I got this information, is saying as of now,
right,
we're looking at and so are some of the at 3%. GDP growth this year, and so are some of the economists that have been most accurate in their predictions. Now, when they say 3%, they're basically saying short of some disaster, 3%, and possibly more. And are there potential disasters out there? Oh, yeah. But this is the interesting thing. We just saw a major oil refinery in Iraq shut down by ISIS, which I think is really interesting because ISIS is like a god of Egypt.
yeah.
And it is basically Al-Qaeda on steroids.
Well, I don't know, but on steroids, there's about 5,000 of them.
Well,
but they have a lot of other people associated with them as well.
They now count their official wealth as approaching $500 billion.
Yep.
Because they have basically
confiscated
opened up
a lot of
banks.
Stuff.
And the other thing is, when I say Al-Qaeda on steroids, people who are following this, if we were going to have a panic, it'd be now.
Right.
Oil prices are up to about $106 a barrel based on a little bit of fear in this area. However, this is the point. And this is one of those things that is brewing out there. Just kind of fasten your seatbelt. Fortunately, it's going on the other side of the world. Their purpose is literally to wipe out the holiest of places of the Shia Muslims. ISIS is Sunni.
Yeah,
it's radical Sunni, Al-Qaeda types, only worse. And I am not joking when I say this, to commit mass genocide against the Shia anywhere where they are.
This is getting Iran involved, because
Iran
is mostly Shia, and they don't like that idea.
Right, and so what we have going on is a potential major civil war in the Middle East.
Well, it's going on. There is a major civil war going on.
Well, it's a civil war, but it could turn major.
This came out of Syria.
Yes.
I want to break this. There is what appears to be a Sunni country forming in what is Syria and Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
That the Sunni-controlled area, there's a bunch of them in Syria, and there's a bunch of them in Iraq, that have been separated by a border that was created after World War I and World War II. It was basically just drawn on a map. The tribal folks are taking over, and it's very similar to what happened in northern Iraq with the Kurds, and that they've had an autonomous area up there since Iraq fell under Saddam Hussein. They had an area that basically the Iraqi army goes up there and says, do we have permission to look around a little bit and kind of hang out in here? And recently, that's not even allowed, because the Kurds are saying, you need to go back home and take care of your business. We've got it handled here. So we have basically what we've seen in many areas of the world recently is a redrawing of old boundaries. And I think that's happening in Iraq and in Syria. We don't want the boundaries that are being drawn there that are totally anti-America, very radically anti-America. Mm. We don't want that to be successful. But that's what's going on. It's what it looks like is happening.
And the ISIS movement is, as I said, it's actually more radical than Al-Qaeda. That's the negative. The positive is we just simply have not heard a lot of pure anti-Americanism out of them. They're mostly anti-Shia.
Right. They're so mixed up in the fighting each other at this
and
point that we're...
They're far more interested in fighting other Muslims than they are in fighting us. Now, is this pleasant? No. Is it a good thing? No. Get used to it. But here's the good news. We've had a lot of bad news flowing out of the Middle East.
The good news is that we've had a lot of bad news?
Well,
I like this.
And our market has not responded negatively.
Correct.
The price of oil has moved a little bit.
Not a lot.
But basically, I think what we're seeing is a large portion of the world saying, that area is pure chaos, let's just stay out of it.
Yeah, and let me take this step a little bit back in time a bit. This whole area was a wasteland. It is a wasteland if you look at it for the vast majority of it. It's mostly desert. The only reason why the population there has been able to form as it has is because of oil wealth. Part of the problem that's going on there is that even though the price of oil has come up substantially over the past 15 years, by substantially, I mean by a factor of 10, during the same time period, we've been using less and less, and the profit margin on that oil has gotten less and less as well. The easy oil is getting harder to find. It's all hard oil. And at the same time, it's really difficult to drill new wells because the people that do the drilling are mostly Texans, actually, that show up and drill these things, and they don't want to drill in a place that they might die. So these areas that are having the most extreme difficulties, and by that I'm going to include Ukraine, are areas that are based in or dependent on oil at prices that it can no longer get. When we're talking about Ukraine, I'm talking about natural gas at prices it can no longer get. Even though we have lowered the price of natural gas, Russia's raised it, and we don't have the means to get it to Ukraine at this point. That's what's happening in Ukraine. The free trade issues are what are underlying all of this. And what it looks to me like is that over the next 15 or 20 years, our dependence on foreign oil will be zero. We will be at the place that we've wanted to be throughout my lifetime. We will be energy independent. And that will destroy parts of the world that have grown up as the source for our energy. They're not going to be the source for our energy anymore. And as the easy money goes away, they're fighting over what's left. That means that they have lots of excuses that they use, you know, to make this a good cause, we got to make it about religion, or to make this a good cause, we have to make it about democracy or despotism or whatever. The reality is the economic conditions that allowed populations to flourish have disappeared. You can look at North Africa, all across North Africa. The areas that have flourished as far as human population goes, I'm sounding very cold in saying this, but the economics have changed and it's more expensive to support life there. So they're fighting over what's left. Now, we can make some decisions here on how we handle that. We can make some decisions here on how we handle it 10 years from now. It's a lot easier to make the decisions based on what's going to happen in 10 years than it is to try to react to the things that are happening today. If we had 10 years ago looked at the future and said we're going to be more energy independent.
Yeah, but we didn't know.
We didn't know.
We thought it was going to go the other way.
Now we know. And we know we're going to be more energy independent in the future, not less. We know our technology's already built up a big enough snowball effect. It's rolling and it's getting bigger. It's getting more momentum. We don't want to be based in oil anymore. We don't want to be based in a place where we're dependent on people that hate us. That means we can make some decisions on how we're going to act in the future.
And I guess one of the most important things to take out of all of this is that there's a lot of the world and a lot of things going on in the world that are unforecastable at this point. And we shouldn't worry about those too much.
Right.
I'll also tell you another thing, very frankly. This is a bit of editorializing, but the Congressional Budget Office and the Office of Management and Budget and the other people who are in the business and the Bureau of Economic Analysis all in agreement on a point. And that is, we do face a threat in the future. And the threat we face in the future economically in the United States is that the baby boomers are retiring at a pretty high rate of speed, and that's going to accelerate. And the cost of that is going up faster than the economy is growing. And we have a choice. And this is one of those hard things that I suggest you think about and be aware of. And that is, we either cut benefits to older Americans who are relatively well off, or we raise taxes on everybody, or we have a problem that's going to pop up in about 10 years or 15
right.
years.
And by cut benefits on older Americans that are relatively well off, that doesn't necessarily mean, in fact, it doesn't mean people that are receiving the benefits today. Although at some point, if we don't make the move, if we don't look down the road and say we're going to lower the benefits to people that haven't received them yet, it will be people that are already receiving it.
But we're getting very, very close. And frankly, I don't see anything.
I'm saying 5 years out at this point.
Well, yeah, what I'm saying, basically if a person's 60 today,
yeah,
that person's Social Security is at risk.
Oh, yeah. I think full retirement age would be 66 or 67 at this point if you're at that age. And that's the point that the danger point is. You're going to probably see some cuts.
And what we were saying is 5 years ago we were talking about cutting at 55. Well,
right.
It's 5 years have gone by. Yeah, now we're talking about cutting 60.
We have to make the decision now, though.
Yeah, we do. And unfortunately, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think we're going to see anything. Eric Cantor, who by every mark is a very highly conservative Republican,
uh-huh.
was beat from the right.
I think, and this is my opinion on this, strictly my own. You don't have to hold anybody else to this.
Okay.
I think Eric Cantor should run as an independent, the same way Lieberman did.
Mm-hmm. That probably would make sense, except for the fact...
Because he was beaten on the left.
Lieberman was beaten on the left or the right?
He was beaten on the left. He's a Democrat that was beaten on the left. He ran as an independent, and he won the election, because the reality is that the majority of people wanted him elected, but
they
the extremists in his own party,
the polls, yeah.
right? The extremists in his own party outnumbered the non-extremists. And when we're talking about Eric Cantor, his whole concept of immigration reform is the thing that's anathema to the Tea Party. They don't want to hear about that. They don't want to talk about letting people into the country legally. They want to talk about a broken system and say it's not broken. All you have to do is look at any headline and you will see there is no way we can enforce the law that is on the book with the people that mm-hmm. we have to enforce it right now.
And I agree with you. And very frankly, even though I don't always agree with Eric Cantor, I would hope that he would run as an independent.
Right.
Because
the extremists are not going to look at reality.
No. And the other thing is we actually need to sit down and work out cuts in benefits and increases in taxes. Now, nobody liked that. If you're on the right, you don't like that second one. And if you're on the left, you don't like that first one. But the point is, it's going to take a little bit of both. We're back in an interesting position, and we've said this before. We are running about 2% of GDP below optimal tax revenue. The United States does best when about 20% of the GDP goes to a combination of FICA, Fed, and all that stuff that comes out of your pay. We're running at about 18%, and we're also running some big deficits. Now, people can say, okay, what we need to do is cut spending. Well, this is my point. There's a big push right now, and this is what's fascinating. It's in the House Armed Services Committee, and there's a big push to save the warthog. Are you familiar with that?
The A-10. Yeah.
And the Air Force doesn't want it. It's a 40-year-old aircraft.
It is a beautiful machine. It does a great job, but it's falling apart.
And we have other aircraft that can do it, and the Air Force says, if you want us to keep this thing, if you want to keep the warthogs, the A-10s, we're going to have to get rid of, like, five wings of F-16s. And F-16s can do the same mission.
Right.
And this is one of those really interesting things that needs to happen, and yet it's being blocked. And that is, it's going to take more money to keep the Warthogs and the F-16s. So we have an Air Force plane that the Air Force doesn't want, that members of the House Armed Services Committee, which are by definition a Republican majority, want to keep, but they don't want to spend any money to keep it.
Right.
And I don't know. We got to have a compromise here somewhere, folks. We can't say, let's keep everything in our home district, but we're going to cut the defense budget, but we're not going to spend more money, but we're going to keep all the... I guess they could keep the aircraft without the pilots.
Right.
And not do any maintenance on them.
That's a problem, though.
And just park them on the runways.
There are a lot of issues like this where people are going with emotions rather than reality. If we look at reality and we say, what is feasible here? What can we do to make this feasible? You cannot make a 40-year-old aircraft continue to fly as efficiently as a new aircraft. You just can't do it.
Yeah, particularly one that was designed for busting tanks, busting Soviet tanks.
Well, we might need that.
Not really. The point is, we have smart weapon systems now that can bust the Soviet tanks better than the A-10.
Right, and not have as much danger to the pilot.
Right.
The fact that ISIS is getting Stinger missiles is not a good thing, in my opinion.
And so
anyway, we're about out of time. If you would like to contact us off the air, please call us. We've got voicemail waiting locally at
947-1111.
Or you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 1-800-914-PLAN. Or you can reach us through email at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. Or you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. We've got a Contact Us page. We also have podcasts of our blatherings and so on. So until next week, this or next hour, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.